ignorance and stubbornness, I didn't really learn too much from him. I wish I had. But what is the best way to teach your kids about the value of money and saving? David Wright is with our Spending Planners Institute, and we've picked his brains a couple of times before on a couple of different things. But today we thought we'd talk children. Hello, David. How are you going?
I'm well, Nick. Yourself?
Not too bad. You mentioned that a lot of the stresses in people's lives come from money, you know, when it comes to divorce, etc. Is there a lot of stress when it comes to kids with the subject of money?
Yeah, it depends on the age we're talking. I've got grandkids from age 2 up to age 12, and my kids are sort of in their 30s. So I was a school teacher for 20 years, so I've seen all ages and dealt with them. I don't think kids have money stress until they're out in the wild world, big bad world, and it's probably in the first couple of years out there that the money stress appears pretty rapidly.
Mm.
As parents, you know, we have the job of teaching them, and as you said, you know, your dad was astute with money, but you didn't learn some of the lessons that maybe he wanted you to learn.
No. Well, and it was never really explicit. I think I just reacted against it. You know, and I just went, I'm in the creative business and I'll ignore it. But that was to my own detriment.
Yeah, well, everyone's different. The moment you have your second child, you realise that, you know, one rule you can apply to one child and another child won't mean anything to them at all. So
yes.
Whilst kids know when you've been not consistent, you also have to try to find ways to teach the kids according to their personalities and their types. Interestingly, if you've ever read The Five Love Languages, you realise that only one of the love languages got money involved in it. You know, quality time. 20% of people, if we're going to say that the population's equally spread, just care about having time spent with them. My grandkids, they'll come around here and jump in my swimming pool, and all the time they're saying, "Poppy, watch me, watch me, watch me." And my kids were the same growing up. Kids don't, that they care. They want to know that you care and you're interested in them. Buying them toys, giving them things doesn't mean a real lot to them. Paying attention to them is more important. So quality time, acts of service, they want you to do stuff with them and for them. Physical touch, words of praise and affirmation. And number 5, giving of gifts. So only 20% of people, when they're little, really have that bent towards, you know, money and gift giving anyway.
Mm.
But we place so much value, we put so much focus on money that kids, they get it all out of whack.
I never thought I'd be speaking to you about the love language, David Wright. I thought we'd be talking about...
Well, I've learned over the last 25 years that money really isn't money. You know, the reason that people have trouble with money... I've this favourite saying that says, if your bank balance says there's a problem... find the problem and solve it, and the bank balance will solve itself. You know, we focus on money, but money isn't the reason for the money problems. It's all sorts of other reasons, and, you know, have you got siblings?
Yeah, I've got four.
So you're kind of admitting that you didn't learn lessons from your dad that maybe you should have. What about the other three?
Oh, well, look, I have several much more sensible brothers and sisters.
So that's, you know, the environment... You can have the same environment and totally different outcomes. So parents, you can do your best, but you know that that your children are going to learn different things and be themselves anyway.
So we'll try and be as,
yep,
what shall we say, as generic as possible.
Yep.
At what sort of age do you start to talk to kids about budgeting?
I would think once they start school, I mean, there's this whole thing about pocket money. Do we give them pocket money? Do we make them earn pocket money? You know, and I would suggest it's probably not a bad thing to give them pocket money, but give them a range of jobs that they might do for that. Then I also think that you should give them specific jobs that they have to do to earn a second part of what they get. So maybe in grade 1 they get $1 a week and there's a few jobs you expect them to do, but then they have the ability to earn another $1 a week. And I always say work backwards. So I would think that once a month, the pocket money that they get at that age should enable them to buy something that they would aspire to. Because at that age, you know, a Kinder surprise is probably an exciting thing, and you know, there's only a couple of dollars involved there. So, you know, make it fit their age bracket. One of the important things is you teach them to start saving. So, you know, I think there's a general rule 10%. So if you give them a jar that says bank account, give them another jar that says savings account. And I think, you know, you can teach them to let them see the money in their bank account, but teach them to start managing that money, keeping records of what they're doing with it and what they're planning to do with it. I one of the things I teach is that, you know, teach your kids that they can work for money or that money can work for them. And at primary school age, I would suggest that there are things in your house, the washing machine, the lawnmower, the dishwasher, that get the shower even, that get used on a regular basis.
Mm.
And you could encourage your kids to save up their pocket money and buy the shower. And then every time somebody has a shower, they get 10 cents put into their jar without having to do anything for it.
Well, I don't know, when you've got teenage boys, quite often encouraging them to have a shower is really good.
Okay.
You might want a couple of bucks, though.
Okay. The lesson is teach your kids to buy income-producing assets. And so in a safe environment, you know, the washing machine might be worth $1 a week. It might only get used once or twice a week. But teach them that they save up $50 of their pocket money, they can own that washing machine for a year, and every time it gets used, they get $1 put in their jar. So over a year, it earns back, you know, you probably want them to earn back more than what it costs them, but, you know, the punishment needs to fit the crime, so to speak. But there's a whole bunch of things in your house that you could teach kids. Well, if you saved up your pocket money and bought that, you could get pocket money without having to do jobs. So, you know, teach them the principle of buying income-producing assets. I think that's probably appropriate.
Okay, so you get the jobs and you've got these various buckets and this is your spending and this is your saving. That's cool. And so when do you get more sophisticated about saving with kids, do you reckon?
Yeah, well, I think once they get to high school age, and I think that's sort of like just before they turn or about teenage years, you know, the games of, you know, you buy the shower and you'll get $1 every time it gets, you know, sort of 10 cents every time someone has a shower probably has worn off.
Yeah.
By then.
Yes, right. Yep.
If you think about, once kids get to high school age, they start getting attitude and puberty and all this stuff that kicks in, you know, you've got to treat them differently. So I'd be thinking ahead, the next 5 years, you know, 5 years from end of high school, they're going to be probably leaving home, going off to uni or starting their life of their own. So at the right now, you've got kids from New South Wales who are probably at the Gold Coast experiencing the wonders of schoolies.
Yep.
That's not a cheap outcome. You know, before they went off to schooling, there was probably a graduation, there was probably a debt ball, there was probably a whole bunch of things that cost mum and dad a truckload of money.
Yep.
So when they're entering into high school, you'd sit them down and say, okay, over the next 5 or 6 years, these are the things that are going to come up. You've got school books every year, you've got school fees, you've got uniforms, you know, you've got casual clothes, and it's going to cost the parents for these things anyway, so why not give the kids, the teenagers, the responsibility for managing that money? And add up the whole lot over the next 5 or 6 years and say, well, look, that comes to, you know, so many $1,000s, so we're going to give you the money that we would have spent, and you're going to have to show us that you can manage it.
But what does managing it mean in this context?
Well, it means that by the time they get to, you know, whenever their debt ball is, if they've got to buy a $1,000 dress or hire a suit or whatever it might be, that you've given them the income over that period of time that they could accumulate that money to have it there to pay for that thing when it happens. And they need to be able to prove to you as year one, year two, year three goes by that they're putting money aside for that outcome. And if they don't, it's not going to happen for them.
But wouldn't they just say, well, you just take care of it and you just pay for it because you're my parent and you're expected to pay for my debt ball and my schoolies, bloody blah.
You will factor in that if they manage it well, there'll be some left over that they can do what they want with it.
Okay, so that you've got to build in an incentive of a bit of surplus.
Absolutely.
Right.
So, you know, there's long, every adult has long-term and short-term and, you know, medium-term things they've got to put money away for. Not many of us are that good at it. You know, there's 2 million people in Australia right now who can't pay their credit card at the end of the month, or worse, you know, who are in default.
Yes.
So, you know, if there's 25 million population, half of them are kids and old people who, you know, there's probably only about half of them who are in the thick of it. We've got to prepare these kids for doing better than that. So we've got to teach them, and the only way you can teach them is to actually give them responsibilities in a safe environment.
Don't give them a credit card for a start.
I would think that a 16-year-old should be paying the family's bills. I would think that a 16-year-old could actually plan the family's holiday and be responsible for paying and dipping out the money when the holiday happens.
Paying the family's bills?
Why not?
Okay, what does that mean? You're frightening me now, David.
Well, here's a phone bill. It has to be paid. It's $100 or whatever it is. Let's jump on the internet and pay the bill.
Okay, so you sit them down with you and you show them, look, you know, here's the thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Here's how we do it.
How else are they going to learn what life costs? You don't want them at age 18 getting out in the real world and going, have a good life, be responsible with your money, we hope you do well.
Okay, so what you're talking about is introducing them to the real world of, okay, here's what the mortgage costs, here's what the phone bill costs, electricity.
Absolutely.
Et cetera. It's just, you know, sit them down with you at your, you know, fortnightly, you know, bill paying session or whatever it turns out to be.
And let them do it. Let them physically log into the banking and pay that bill or make a ring up and press the buttons to pay the phone bill if you're doing it quite safe. However it is, because they've got to learn physically managing money and they've got to learn what life costs. They've got to learn that life is all about compromises. If you have more of this, you have less of that.
Yep.
You know, if we use the phone less, if we use the lighting less, if we can cut the costs on electricity and telephone and all of those things, well, then we can have more of the fun stuff and see that what the parents have got to go through and get some insight into what that's like, because not long down the track, that's where they're going to be.
Got a couple of comments through here in our text line, David.
Yeah.
Lou says, charge your kids rent and board and put this money aside when they're ready to move out, give it back to them. Yeah, that's nice, Lou.
That's a twist on the same idea, and I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, yeah, interesting. It would be, to do it as a surprise, so they don't know they're getting it back.
Yeah, yeah.
I reckon that might be the go. Here's another one from Penny. Jars, Nick, jars. From a very early age, I showed our kids how much life costs by using jars, i.e. a jar for the Easter show, a jar for electricity, a jar for Jamboree Water Park, a jar for holidays, a jar for gigs and festivals, a jar for rego and car insurance, etc. We still put money in our jars, and kids grew up knowing that if there's nothing in the jar, the next concert doesn't happen. You can see it getting filled, but also how much is spent. Pen, wow, you are a forward-thinking person.
Yep.
That's exactly what you were talking about, wasn't it? You know, there's a compromises, and you can see it filling and you can see it emptying.
Yeah, and you know, that's what life is. You can't have everything. And if you're one of these parents that, and look, I saw this as a school teacher, the kids that had attitude, that were really, you know, angry and hard to manage, often with the kids who were given everything,
yeah,
and their parents had this thing that if I upset my kids, they won't love me, they won't like me.
Yeah.
And what I saw was the kids that got everything hated the outcome. I won't say hated their parents, but they certainly despised the experience that they were getting. I heard on the ABC News yesterday that there was a survey of young people, and the biggest issue that young people believe is you know, an issue today is mental health.
Yeah.
And I would challenge you and say, well, I seriously doubt that there are too many kids that are out there on drought-stricken farms doing their daily chores, feeding the cattle, doing the stuff that has to be done, who are worried about mental health issues because they're busily engaged in the business of life at an earlier age. The ones that sit around playing Xbox and who don't get a purpose in life at an earlier age and don't get taught responsibilities are the ones who are going, oh, I'm really worried about who I am, or, you know, I may be generalising, but I just see that we've lost our way. You know, a couple of generations ago, every child had a place in the family and in the family's life, and you had jobs to do. You know, I grew up on a farm, and there were cattle to be fed, there was crops to be harvested, there was jobs to be done, and we all got in and did the jobs, and I don't see any of my brothers or sisters having mental health issues.
So you're being busy, you're not sort of inside your own head, you're actively engaged in life.
There's a purpose, and you've got to get, you don't have time to sit around thinking about, oh, who am I and what's, you know, what are, it's, you get engaged and be a person long before you're an adult. You know, have a purpose in your life and start to realise that, you know, that life can be so fulfilling and so much fun. And, you know, getting in and doing jobs, no kids want to get up and do jobs in the morning, but, you know, if you let them believe that they can get out of it or that there's no need for it, you're setting them up for a difficult life.
Mm. David, you've been almost a philosopher as well as a budgeter today.
We could probably talk on this topic many, many times over.
I can see that. I can see that. We'll pick your brains again next year.
Great. Thank you. I enjoyed that session, and Merry Christmas to your listeners.
All right, mate. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, mate.
Ciao. David Wright from the Spending Planners Institute here at 97.3 ABC Illawarra. We'll have space time after the news.